Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit MedMutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. My name is Phil. Joining me as usual, I've got my partner in crime here, Rohan. Good morning, how are you?
Hey Phil, morning. Good, thanks.
As usual, this episode of the Home Assistant Podcast is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant, ESP Home, and Z-Wave JS projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. All right, Rohan, it is finally August. Yes. I should say, but every month we're like, wow, it's going so quick.
It is.
So 2024.8 is here. We've actually got a bit to talk about in this episode. Not just about 2024.8, but I think, Rohan, I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring out this again.
Oh, no.
I'm going to do it. All right, cloud strikes again. This time I've got two very interesting ones. So first up I've got is Telstra TV. Now, I don't expect you, Rohan, to know anything about what Telstra is or Telstra TV.
I know who they are. I don't know what this is relating to, though.
Yeah, okay. So Telstra TV, I'll back up. So Telstra is the major telco here in Australia. They basically were government-owned back in the day.
Right.
So they owned basically all the infrastructure, right? And we've got three telcos. We've got Telstra, Optus, and Vodafone, which is like a third-party reseller network. It gets a bit complicated, but essentially all we need to know is Telstra is the main one, and they are pretty much, everyone knows Telstra. Now, Telstra have a few services, one of those things being the pay TV sort of area. So they have a box called the Telstra TV. And what it is it's actually just a white label Roku underneath.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah. So Roku do not exist in Australia. If you want a Roku box, like you have to go either get it through eBay, imported from the US, or you could get a Telstra TV box and it would be Roku underneath. Now, what that meant is that apps, like specifically for Australia, so we have ABC iView, SBS On Demand, all the streaming services for Australia, they don't have a Roku app, right? So I have a Roku that's imported from the US. I can't get the local content on the Roku because it's restricted to the Telstra TV. Now, Telstra TV Telstra have announced that they are no longer supporting the Telstra TV box. It's now 2024. Netflix is here.
Right.
They've got a whole bunch of new streaming services, and they've just found it not compelling to offer the Telstra TV service anymore. But what they're doing is that they're actually stopping supporting the service completely, and they're also bricking the Telstra TV devices. So that means that the Roku, yeah, these Telstra TV rebranded Roku boxes will no longer work at all. They are now expensive paperweights, which is completely disappointing.
And you know what gets me about a lot of these kind of companies is, like, again, a company like a very large company like Telstra. Again, I'm not here to judge what they are as a service provider or anything like that. I have no experience with them. I don't use them, anything like that. Obviously, being in Canada, but I bet you they have some kind of green mandate, something like that, where they're like, hey, you know, we I don't know, we offset carbon by doing this, or I'm sure they have some kind of mandate around that, right? And it's like, okay, but at the same time, you're also just like creating all of this e-waste while you're at it.
Yep.
Right. Maybe they don't have that mandate. Maybe it's just, you know, maybe they're not trying to greenwash or whatever you call it, right? And it's but more often than not, they probably are trying to greenwash and saying, hey, you know, we want to do all of these things. But then now you just said, again, I don't know how popular these devices are across Australia. You mentioned, Phil, that they are one of the larger service providers there. So I assume it's popular enough that there's a few thousand of these out there, I would assume, at least at minimum. So that's kind of frustrating, right?
And I guess from Telstra's point of view, like, the Telstra TV box probably wasn't, you know, that popular, being, you know, like a white label Roku that's sort of like not had the complete control over it. And I guess what's really annoying is, like, by making it a white label, by restricting, you know, the content store of Roku down so much, that meant you can't get, you know, you had to sideload, I think, things like Plex on there. What this means, though, is that if you do have a Telstra TV, you can't now just, you know, go, okay, thanks, I'll switch over to the Roku, you know, firmware. And because, you know, the Roku firmware I use here in Australia, fine, I can access Netflix, I can access Disney Plus. I've got Plex running on it, right? So the fact that Telstra's just completely abandoning it and not, you know, letting people go to a slimmed down version of, you know, the Roku firmware that's getting updated is a bit disappointing.
So I'm wondering, like, is it locked down enough that you can't actually just put like a Roku binary on there and run the
Roku enough? I didn't buy a Telstra for this reason. I didn't want to buy it and then get, you know, the ability not to jailbreak it, essentially.
Sure.
But from media reports, it sounds like Telstra's just, I think they're giving like a discount code if you want to upgrade to their new hardware offering, you know, like here's a $50 token or something.
I don't know, to me it's not about that, right? It's about the environmental piece there too. And it's like, hey, I already spent the time and money and whatever to set this device up. Why don't want to do it again?
100%. So anyway, that's the Telstra TV. The second one I have, it's actually I don't know, I find it comical, but it's probably not comical to people to own them. So Ron, do you remember, I think it was around pandemic time, Nike came out with these self-lacing shoes.
Yeah, like Back to the Future kind of.
Yeah.
I think it was an homage to Back to the Future.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's an app on your phone, and you use the app on the phone to basically tie up your shoelaces.
Oh, that I didn't know. I assumed it just like looked for like the heel click or something like that, and then.
Yeah, I thought so. I've read that there was an app on your phone that you could use to tie up your shoelaces with these shoes. Nike are no longer supporting that app anymore. It's going to be removed from the app stores. And I don't know if it's true, but I believe that you can no longer tie your shoelaces with
Stupid. Oh my God. That's for anybody that bought these shoes. I'm so sorry. Like that is such a cool shoe to have. It's just such a cool homage to the movie and like stuff like that.
Yep. I think it's really disappointing to see that like, company, it was just a PR exercise, right? And the PR's gone. They're not getting anything value out of hosting the app anymore. So Nike's like,
that's so frustrating.
It's just a deleted product line, right?
There you go. Don't rely on smart connected shoes unless they're, I don't know, Zigbee or Z-Wave or something. Here's my LoRaWAN shoes for when I go for a run. Hey, that's not a bad idea. Like GPS tracker that'll.
Okay, and then you can someone's stealing your shoes, like what, you can like trip them up or something, like
yeah you're right, it's kind of comical, but I'm sad for the people that bought it. It's not even like, again, like some people will be like, hey, this is stupid, and I'm not a big shoe guy. I've got a lot of friends that are, like, again, they've got closets full of shoes, like probably tens of thousands of dollars worth of shoes. I am not that. I currently, my current pair that I, my everyday pair, is one that I got from Free for Work. So it's not anything special, but yeah, that's so silly. I feel so bad for people that, because yeah, like I said, it's a cool collector's thing now. It's a cool paperweight.
And then I guess, like, what's even, like, and to tie it into what's going on at the moment, Google's really tightening up the Play Store, restricting, you know, like, some apps in the Play Store that aren't verified or anything like that. And a lot of, you know, Samsung's, you know, trying to really restrict you from sideloading APKs. So even if you were to, you know, download the APK for this Nike app and try and sideload it, you may get restricted.
And then you got to... What's it called on Android? Root your phone, jailbreak, whatever, the jailbreak version on Android. Root your phone, I guess.
And that's assuming that the Nike app isn't cloud-based anyway, right?
Right. If they just take down the full server there, then... So this is maybe Cloud Strikes again? I'm guessing it's like running BLE or something like that anyway, so...
Maybe. Yeah, but then if you've got to sign into a Nike account to then pair... Like, you know how they put apps behind a cloud account? I don't know. I never got these shoes, so I'm only commenting on what I've heard online.
Maybe, maybe somebody will figure out a way to do this via Bluetooth proxy. What do you do when you leave your when you're let's say I'm coming to your house, Phil, and you don't have that? How am I going to dive my shoes then? I don't know.
And then you could use like Bluetooth proxy, like location, to go, when I stand by this door, or when I wave my foot under this box, like it ties the shoelaces for me.
Or, again, this is getting into grossly over-engineering something. I have no idea what I'm talking about. You have, like, a portable one. It's got a battery behind it. You just press a button and boop, there you go. But see, I feel like this is a great opportunity for Nike to just be like, hey, we're killing the service if you want to continue using your shoes. Which I also don't condone, by the way, because I think this is actually absolutely shady. But they can at least, like, sell, like, a button or something. Be like, hey, here it is. Mm-hmm. And then... at least press this button and you can still continue to use your shoes. Remote, yeah, like, yeah. No, it's...
Maybe they should have, had one of that when they were selling the shoe. But then, yeah.
So stupid. All right.
Anyway, so there were two Cloud Strikes again. A serious one and maybe a serious one for those that own those shoes. But, Rohan... there was an update regarding the Home Assistant Yellow, yeah. And I don't have a Home Assistant Yellow, so I read the blog post and wasn't completely sure what it all meant.
This is not a Cloud Strikes again. I'm just going to make sure. That segment is done. we should have an outro for that segment to make it very clear. So Home Assistant Yellow. First of all, let me backtrack a little bit. So Home Assistant Green, for those of you in the U.S., is now available to purchase on Amazon. Nabucasa has an official Amazon store. It actually looks really nice. So it kind of talks about, hey, this is the green, blah, blah, blah. The yellow isn't on there. I don't know that they plan to put the yellow on there. Maybe, maybe not. Right now, it's just a green. I'm sure they'll bring in some of the other things, like the... formerly known as Sky Connect, whose model number I can't remember right now. So that's kind of the one side of this. The other side of this is they did update some stuff in the Home Assistant Yellow. So now it is, they're selling it as a, hey, here's the Home Assistant Yellow package before you can kind of piecemeal some of those pieces. So here it is in one condensed package. It's just one thing, kind of, right? You still have to get the Pi CM4 yourself, but everything else is kind of comes along with it, and just they're just saying, hey, this is what we have, right? So there's a blog post around that that they posted, so have a read through that if you're interested in getting a yellow. One thing I will say right now is, I mean, and we were kind of talking about this in the creators call last week, Phil, and the yellow, the kind of downfall with the yellow is it is meant to be a more powerful device, more advanced device. However, it's like, you know, just trying to pick the CM4, the right CM4 that you want. Like, just even going through the model numbers is just like, oh, I want this much RAM, I want Wi-Fi, I want this, I want that. And it's just like, it, that itself is like trying to figure out, it's like rocket science there, right? You need a degree in trying to figure out decoding that their I'll call it silly model numbers. But, you know, I run a Yellow right now. I've fully transitioned off of my Docker install into the Yellow right now. I've actually shut down my Docker install. So, yeah, so it's, I like the device. I do have a Green as well, but I'm using that more as a dev box. But I don't know, I feel like they're actually equally powered, right? And the nice thing is with the Green, it is fully self-contained. There's no CM4 or things like that. But that also means that it's not as modular, right? So tomorrow CM5 comes out, you go in and say, okay, here is click, here you go. And that's what you get, right? So yeah, that's, I don't know. So some updates, not good, not bad, just it's updates.
Yeah, it's interesting because like, I guess the Yellow was supposed to be the new successor to the Home Assistant Blue, right? And now I feel as though with this update, it sort of leaves, you know, Nabucasa with only the Green as their completely self-contained one-stop shop unit to buy, right? Like if you're going to give Home Assistant to a friend and say, just plug it in and play, Home Assistant Green is the only option you've got.
Ish. Remember the Green doesn't have Zigbee built in or anything like that, right? So you still need an external piece there. Today, if I was to buy a brand new, like if I am just saying, like, let's say my parents say, hey, you know what, I want into Home Assistant, I want to do all this home automation stuff, I would probably go for a Green. I know there's some people that are like, well, you know, it doesn't come with all this stuff integrated. Yeah, it's not a huge deal, I think. Like, fine, I'll get an external USB, whether that's a Home Assistant branded one or not.
Yep.
I can get an external USB, Zigbee, Z-Wave, whatever it is I want. It's not a huge deal, right? Like even on my dev box, I've got my old, because I really need to remember the name of what it's called, but I have Sky Connect, whatever they rebranded it to. And I apologize. But so I use that on my, I actually use that on my Yellow as a separate radio for Thread, along with my built-in radio, right? So it's not a huge deal. Because if you want to do that, you're going to do that anyways. And then just plug it in, right? And then same with Z-Wave. Z-Wave, you're going to need an extra device anyways. So great, there's that. Just remember to use a USB extension cable just to keep it far away from the other USB stuff and so on and so forth. And run it on USB 2. But other than that, yeah. If I was to do it today, I'd probably just get a Green. It's less expensive, does the job well, and is fully supported by Nabucasa. I'm still a big fan of my Docker install. The only difference is I do like having the add-on store and such in my Yellow/Green. And it's another just dedicated device that does just that task. As much as I wanted to get away from that, which was my original thought about putting it on my lab server instead of in running it in Docker instead of in you know, on like a Raspberry Pi or something. You can also run it as a VM, HAOS. Tons of options. I just find the Green is simple. So if I was to do it again, like I said, if I was to start today, that's probably what I'd do.
Yeah, makes sense.
What would you do it, Phil?
Look, I mean, I have the Home Assistant Green. I am concerned about its power though. Like, I don't know. I do find, yeah, I always see that's is a Raspberry Pi underneath? Is it a
No, it's not. It's custom.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Whatever. It's ARM based. It's not a Raspberry Pi though.
Okay. Yeah.
Because a big reason they did that is because of the shortages at the time, right? It was impossible.
That's
to buy
right.
A Pi,
yes.
Which is
yes.
Why my Yellow took about a year to show up.
I mean, I opened up my Green the other day for the first time, and I like you. I really loved the what is it? The add-on store I had, because I've only ever run like Docker containers, right? And I'm like, oh yeah, right, like this add-on store is amazing. And it was just so easy to have, you know. I tried to run, what was it, ZWave.js add-on store, ran that. My goal is to use the Green as a satellite for the ZWave.js. So yeah, I still have to work that out. I think I need to experiment and see how the performance is of the green compared to my current server, which is an old, you know, desktop computer that was going to be throwing in the garbage anyway, right?
In all honesty, your desktop computer is probably a little more powerful than that, but the nice thing, and one thing I've started to do as well, because I still have my lab environment. So I've actually offloaded stuff like ZWebJS into my lab environment.
Yep.
And then kept my yellow just running Home Assistant and a couple of lighter add-ons, even ESP Home and stuff. I found that my box didn't have enough RAM to deal with it.
Yep.
So every time I tried to recompile my ESP Home or my ESP whatever firmware that goes on my ESP32s, it was failing, right? So just because it didn't have enough RAM. So then when I punted it back off to my Docker, so maybe a combination of that couple.
Right? Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll be interested to see how the RAM goes when I eventually get my Z-Wave, you know, network running on it. Anyway, put a bit of a digression there around Home Assistant Yellow update, but 2024.8, that's what we're here to talk about today. I don't think it's a huge release, but there's a couple of nice things in here. So year of the dashboard, or the dashboard, whatever they're going to call it. There was a chapter 2 on YouTube, so I recommend you go and watch that if you can. Obviously, Home Assistant is now taking a focus this year on dashboards, and one on the roadmap, you know, the big thing was, you know, dashboards, you know, getting easier dashboards, more intuitive. We've already had the new sections layout released. 2024.8 brings a whole change to badges. Now, badges are those little things at the top of your screen. They've always been on the, if you've ever looked at the Home Assistant homepage, you would have seen Paulus's little emoji on the top of the Home Assistant screenshot. They have now been completely redesigned. And they actually look really nice. I don't use badges myself. I've never found a use for them. Per se, I've always found them get in the way of things. But these ones look really good. And I am, potentially going to look at... I'm thinking using Mushroom elements at the moment, or entities. I've been maybe look at cards now, because they just look really nice.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of inspiration taken from the chips, right?
And
that's the thing. I found that I was never using the badges. I just didn't like the look of them. I just didn't like the function. Like, it'd be like, hey, your house is 23.4 degrees Celsius. Yep. And then, like, half of it's underneath, half of it...
So it was always out of the circle, and it was
like, I just never found it to be, like functionally fine, and just aesthetically, it was just not nice.
Yeah.
Whereas the new layout kind of gives you a little more information, right? Where you can go in and say, hey, I want to do... hey, Rohan is currently home, and other information, last updated 2 hours ago, right? Whatever you want to throw in there. So, you know, you get that visual representation, but you can also read saying, hey, it's here. And now you can start controlling visibility into there and so on and so forth, right? With the newer update. So, which is really nice. I would much rather these kind of badges rather than the old style. Yeah, I just found the old style kind of unusable for the most part. I never really used them, right? So for that reason. All right, moving on. Service calls. So there's been an update to service calls. Home Assistant has always had the concept of services. So in YAML, you know, you'd call like, to trigger like a light turning off, you'd say light dot turn off, turn underscore off, right? That's now being renamed to actions. They're doing this kind of for consistency, even though it was kind of consistently services before. but, you know, the big fear here is, well, everything in Home Assistant relies on this, right? So what'll break? So the way they're doing it is actually, I actually agree with the way they're doing this, which is not really a transition, but it's basically... When you go in and you start looking at these services, they'll actually just automatically be named action. So when you start looking at automations and things like that, they'll all be called actions. And then when you save it in the back end, it'll actually be changed to action. So instead of saying service colon light dot turn off or whatever, It'll be action, colon, light, turn off. And when you look at the YAML, it'll actually show you action. In the back, it's actually still service. But then if you make a change, let's say you add an emoji to something or just hit a space and hit save, whatever that is, it doesn't have to be an actual like large change, or you don't have to go in and change the word action. Both will still work, right? So even if you're running it on YAML, you've got a bunch of stuff that's a service. You don't have to run in and just, oh my God, everything's going to break. Action, action, action. It'll just seamlessly work, right? So you don't need to fear for that. So this is kind of already done in the UI for the January release. Like, and if you start looking at like automations and stuff like that. But now even in the documentation, everywhere in Home Assistant, it's just kind of standardizing on the word action. And I think it is naming wise, I think action makes a little more sense than service. It's like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Services are very engineering/programming way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's not user-friendly.
Yeah, exactly, right? Whereas action is like if I tell my mom, for example, like, hey, you know, you got to run this service, she'll be like, what the heck are you talking about?
Yeah, that's no, I'm not running a service. Yeah.
Right, versus, hey, go do an action. And it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So for YAML users, like I said, you can use service or you can use action, and it'll be backward compatible, so it's not going to break. But if you're building anything in YAML going forward, use action. It just it's easier.
It is interesting. Like, as YAML, like, I've always done YAML, right? I've been using YAML since before, you know, editing in the UI was a thing. It is good to see that Home Assistant hasn't put up a deprecation for this, right? They haven't said, we are making everyone change their YAML. Here's 12 months to do it, essentially. So that's good. Because there is so much YAML out there that has service written in it.
And that's why I think they're kind of keeping both. I did ask the question. I don't think there's any plans right now to deprecate it. I don't think they're ever going to. Never say never, but that is my read on kind of what Paulus and Frank were talking about in the creators call.
And I guess if they do change their mind, they're going to have to then add a year's deprecation notice on top of that, right? Like, if they decide in 6 months' time, okay, we're going to remove it, we've got to give people 12 months' notice.
Yeah, exactly. But for now, the direction is you can use both, but lead with action if you're starting from scratch. Like I said, any updates to existing automations or what have you, those will automatically get changed to actions once you save that automation. If you don't, it'll show up as action, but if you look under the covers, it actually says services. But when you do save it, it will save as actions.
But no breaking change, which is a positive.
No breaking change.
All right. Alarma is finally here. So if you don't know what Alarma is, it is a local large language model AI agent. It can now be used in place of OpenAI and Google AI or Gemini. This is great. So yeah, if you are trying to avoid, you know, costly cloud AI expenses, there is now an option to run it locally. I did see that there were some benchmark stats that the Navicaster or the contributors to this had tried to do. They were still verifying those stats when at the time of this recording, at least. But essentially, OpenAI and Google AI were getting something, you know, like in the 90% range, whereas the local Alarma was getting, you know, low 80%. They still need to confirm those numbers. But yeah, I think you are going to get more accuracy or better responses out of, you know, a cloud service, but you also have to pay the premium and are tied to the cloud. So.
And it will get better, right? It's just time.
Yeah.
But speaking of cloud and AI, OpenAI now defaults to GPT-4o Mini, which means that it'll probably save you a bunch of dollars.
That's great.
Yeah.
As someone who has just like put his head in the sand about all this like OpenAI stuff, like I saw Gemini. I was in the Australian Home Assistant Facebook group and some people doing some cool stuff. Like I saw someone had a prompt where they would send snapshots from their camera and get alerts back. And everyone, I actually thought of you. You could use this. And their prompt was...
Hey, UPS guy is here.
It's like, you know, tell me what is happening in a photo, right? But tell me in a snarky way. And there's this guy approaching with a box, and, you know, the Google AI comes back and it says, you know, there's a man approaching the door holding a box. What the hell is he doing? And I thought,
that's awesome.
Ron, you could do this. You could just send your camera feed to OpenAI or Google Gemini and just tell it, you know, is this a UPS van or not? Like, is this a delivery or not? And if it's a delivery, tell me I've got a delivery.
Hot dog,
and then
or
I can
no
stop
hot
bugging
dog.
You.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for the Silicon Valley reference there. Yes.
We'll be right back with 2024.8 after this message from our sponsor. Have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's probably not as incognito as you think. Google recently settled a $5 billion lawsuit after being accused of secretly tracking users in incognito mode. And Google's defense? Well, incognito doesn't mean invisible. In fact, all your online activity is still 100% visible to a ton of third parties, unless you use a service like ExpressVPN. Without ExpressVPN, third parties can still see what you did online, even in incognito mode. From your internet service provider to your mobile network provider, if you're at work or traveling, even the admins of that network can see what's going on. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers so third parties can't see your browsing history. ExpressVPN also hides your IP address, making it extremely difficult for those pesky trackers to see your online activity. It's easy to use. Just fire up the app and click one button. From phones, laptops, tablets, and even Docker containers, you can stay private on the go. My family and I took a recent trip to beautiful Montreal, and we relied heavily on ExpressVPN because I didn't trust the hotel Wi-Fi to protect my privacy. I ran it across all of my devices, and I felt assured that my privacy was protected. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/homeassistant. That's expressvpn.com/homeassistant. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/homeassistant. It's again, there's some cool stuff you can do with it. It is, again, right now I think cost is a issue, at least for me it is, right? Yep. I mean, doing things like defaulting to GPT-40 mini, great, that's actually really cool. Hopefully that will, for those of you that do use OpenAI and that do have a subscription and so on and so forth, hopefully that'll kind of help manage some of those costs.
I'd be interested to know what those costs are. Like, if someone's out there running, you know, OpenAI, what's your average monthly, like, how many tokens are you using? Is it expensive? Are you getting value
for
money out of it? I'd love to hear some stories.
Yeah, email us, or if you're watching it on YouTube, just throw it in the comments. That would be awesome if you could tell us.
All right, HomeKit Bridge now supports event entities representing doorbell and motion sensors. So this is great. And I believe there's also been some other updates around like events and stuff. So I think Ubiquiti Cameras got a whole bunch of stuff. August Locks, there's been a few other satellite integrations around that have benefited from this too. So
Mealy, whole bunch of new features, including new actions. There you go. Like the use of words there. So now you can import recipes, set meal plans, and view shopping lists in Mealy. So that is pretty cool. I've been using Mealy forever, and I've got exactly 3 recipes in there, and I haven't touched it since. Not in Home Assistant, not in anything. It's just running as a service. It was one of those ideas where I'm like, hey, you know what? Let me do this, and then I can just have an iPad in the kitchen, and you know, as we're like, whether it's myself or my wife or whoever's making whatever, we can just have it like, hey, here's the recipe for blah.
Yep. I am exactly the same boat as you, and I saw this come up on the release notes and I was like, oh man, like I'm only just getting back into grocery. Like I stopped using grocery for a little bit just when we were
after
in between houses. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've just started getting back into it. And then Mealy's coming along and I don't know. Like, I just love the whole premise of it. It's just, keeping track of things. Like, I need to be better at meal planning, right? Like, we get to a point where, you know, kids are hungry, and we're like, what's in the fridge for meal? And nothing, right? And you're like, got to run out to the supermarket, get something.
Which you still will, right? Because I don't actually know if Millie does shopping list integration. It might or may not. I've set it up and I never actually looked at it. But
yeah. So, but the whole idea being that, you know, Monday we're going to have this meal. Tuesday we're going to have this meal. Wednesday we're going to have this meal. I need to get better at that. Grocery has, meal plans and all that, stock allocation and stuff. So
what I would love is if, maybe it's doable now. Because you can view your shopping lists, right? So I wonder if I can somehow link the Amazon Echo, because there's a skill today. So I use AnyList for my shopping list today, right? Because I can have it, my wife can have it at a synchronized list kind of thing. I wonder if we synchronize it with Mealy instead, like with using the Amazon Echo. But the problem is too, now it's like, now I have to say, hey, ask AnyList to add bell peppers to my shopping list.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, because that's a change that the Echo just brought in, like, 2 months, like, yeah.
Which is so stupid. Like way to make it more annoying for me to use, right? So now, it's because we're so used to saying, add this to the shopping list. My wife and I occasionally still do that. And it's now on the Amazon shopping list that I don't look at, versus AnyList, right? And it's like, oh, come on, man. I would love to see something like that. I don't actually know if it's possible, because I don't think Home Assistant can expose. Maybe it can. I have to look into this.
No, so this is one of my, this is the big request I have for the Amazon Media Player integration, which is a custom component. Like, if they could expose the Amazon Echo shopping list as a shopping list or a to-do list in Home Assistant, I would be like, it would be fantastic, right? Because then you could sync, as soon as you tell the little lady, add this to the shopping list, you could then push it over to Wunderlist or to Grocery, to Mealy, yeah, wherever it needs to go, right? Through Home Assistant. But
see, I would actually love to see that native instead of, because Media Player to me is getting Home Assistant to talk to the Echo. To me, Echo talking to Home Assistant should be native.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And
but I don't know. Yeah. What the skill?
That's why I'm kind of like, I'd love to see that natively, because I don't actually want to have a plugin for that, or I don't want to have an extra extension and manage all of those things. And I said the word. and the Media Player integration is actually extremely good, right? And I've used it for years, whatever. But I don't know. I think it's just that one thing where I'm like, I kind of want that natively, because it can integrate into the Home Assistant list, and because Home Assistant lists can now synchronize with other lists from external services. So Mealy comes in a Home Assistant, the Echo talks to Home Assistant, again Home Assistant the brain. Right, so that's kind of how I'd want. Maybe it's doable. I know Frank listens to the podcast, so Frank just messaged me and say if it's possible. And
I have a feeling that Amazon have really restricted down the shopping list API, and that's why those third party integrations have had to change their skills no longer being able to just natively reference the Amazon Echo shopping list. So,
and the more Amazon does this kind of crap, it's the more they're pushing folks like myself to move more and more closer to the Home Assistant voice integration, right? Which is actually at a very good place right now. It's just right now for me, it's just, it's effort, right? And it's the ability to, do a bunch of things with different units and stuff like that. There's still a couple of things the Echoes do really well, like playing music. And actually even that, I'd use playing, doing well with a little asterisk there. Every time I'm like, hey, play this song, and it doesn't. It's like, okay, and then nothing, right? And
my three-year-old daughter has just, like, she's loving yelling out her name now, setting timers, but even like random thing the other day, and I know we're completely off topic here, but she asked the little lady in the Echo to play ballet music, And the Echo goes, sure, playing Disney princesses for you. And I'm like, that's not ballet music. Disney princesses is not ballet music.
The best is when it's like, hey, play this song. And it's like, playing blah, blah, blah by blah, blah, blah on Spotify. And then just dead air after that for hours.
Oh, you get that too? Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Or I get the playing on Amazon Music, and then I get an email to say, thank you for activating an Amazon Music subscription. And I'm like, why? Why didn't you use my Spotify? Why do I now have to call Amazon support? Why do I have to talk to someone in Amazon support and say, cancel the subscription that I didn't
ask
for?
I don't know.
Anyway, we have completely digressed from the Melee integration. Thank you for everyone contributing to that project and the integration. You are making Rohan and Mai's life not easier, but we should be easier thanks to your stuff. But we're just lazy and can't get our heads around it. KNX. So if you have a KNX integration, it can now be managed by the UI in Home Assistant. Now, this is actually really cool. I've seen some screenshots because I don't have KNX myself. But you can now create, update, delete KNX entities directly from the UI. And there's a dedicated KNX panel. I love this. And I think it's similar to ZHA. I'd love to see this for ZWave.js. I know ZWave.js is very tightly integrated with Home Assistant as it is. But, you know, just, yeah, this seemed really, really tight as an integration. So, yeah, I loved seeing this.
What's cool is it's actually a new UI that they've built specifically for KNX.
And it looks like it looks new, right? It looks you know how like we've got the new tables design coming out with the tags, you know, that like that looks great, right? This, like, you can just see it looks fresh, it looks new, it doesn't look dated or cobbled together from the existing components. It actually looks fit for purpose.
Yeah. And it's not the same as the UI you would expect as Home Assistant, right? So, which is odd, I would say, just because it's not, if you're using this, it's not the same visually. You're like, oh, I'm in a very different place right now, right? But you're actually in Home Assistant. You don't have to leave it. You don't have to ever go into the KNX piece there. So everything is just kind of there, which is really, really nice. You're right though, Phil. It looks very slick. So whoever designed that, kudos. So it's great.
Just talking of slick, as a little tangent, the new Home Assistant website looks slick as well. Like, when I was reading I just randomly logged on and I'm like, whoa, this is shiny, it's new, it's, there's little things like the example app on the home screen is now like, you can actually like go into it and click thing buttons in it and on that little mobile phone that's there.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's a nice little,
it's like little things like that are really cool. I just really like the design. It looks really professional. It goes like a long way from, you know, that very developer, let's grab a random template off the internet and slap something together.
It's cool. It's so cool. I didn't realize those buttons. This stuff I'm just playing around with.
Yeah, you can click the lights and get the UI for it. Yeah,
I have multiple Home Assistant instances running. I don't know why I'm finding this so fascinating right now. even the integrations and documentation for the integrations and stuff like that, you'll notice a bit of a CSS change. It looks a lot nicer too. So it is really nice. All right. Where were we? Assist. So we were talking about boys and all that stuff. There's a little bit of love for Assist in the last updates as well, where they were doing some cool stuff. So now timer support for mobile devices are here. So now Assist can tell you the current date and time. But it can also, like, when you, like, let's say you have an iOS shortcut to go tell Assist, like, hey, set a timer for 5 minutes, right? So what it'll do is it'll go set that timer. And then when that timer is up, you'll actually get a pop-up notification saying, hey, your 5 minute timer is up, right? So really cool. I this is exactly how I would have thought to do it. And that's what happens, which is fantastic. So.
And I really love, you know, closer you can get to, you know, replacing my Amazon Echo and Google Home, the better, right? Because I think they're getting long in the tooth, those devices, for whatever reason. I know Amazon's looking at introducing an AI version of the little lady for a monthly subscription. I'm just finding them
depending on what they're charging, that's enough for me to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go and invest X amount of dollars into a NVIDIA Jetson Orin or whatever it is, like $600 or whatever they cost, and then just say, hey, you know what? I'm just going to run this locally, or $800 or whatever, depending on what they're charging. Again, do I need it? Absolutely not. So I'm saying this, but I probably won't do it because I don't necessarily need that at this point in my life.
All right. We have some new integrations. We don't have any new integrations. We do have some integrations. I'll get to them in a sec. But we now have integrations that are set up by YAML will now be shown in the UI of Home Assistant. So in your settings panel of Home Assistant, if you go into integrations or devices and integrations, previously, that would only show integrations that were configured through the UI. Now, if you've got an integration, like an older integration that can't be configured via the UI, it will now be listed in that panel, and it will have a little icon to denote that, you know, this integration is configured manually by code. So now that devices and integrations page can actually be an accurate source of truth of all the integrations that you have added to Home Assistant, as opposed to previously, you didn't know where that random integration was, if it was in code, if it was in the UI. Now you know, here it is, it's there. So that's great. I really love that page as well.
Yeah, and like I said offline, Phil, I thought this was always there, but I guess it wasn't. I thought I'd seen like...
No, it's been there for, what was it, for packages. So if you have the store, it was there for packages. Like it has a yellow icon to denote that, you know, this isn't an official component or integration. It's via Hacks otherwise. And then they added, you know, to denote if it's a cloud-based integration, they've got a little cloud there, those sort of things. But now they've got another icon to denote this is code-based.
All right. Speaking of new integrations, let's talk what some of the new integrations are for this release. So starting with Autarco, I don't even know how to pronounce that. Autarco. So you can monitor the performance of your Autarco's connected solar panels, inverters, and batteries. Really cool.
Bryant Evolution, HVAC systems, they're now integrated with Home Assistant.
Dio Chacon, you can connect those devices via RF-433 or Wi-Fi.
I think they're like a European-based IoT. There's like a smart home vendor. They've got like plugs and all that. IoT, control your IoT smart home light switches, gates, covers, and outlets through Home Assistant now. That's great.
Yeah. And the first one I can pronounce is IronOS. Integrate your IronOS powered soldering iron with Home Assistant over Bluetooth. This one's actually pretty cool. Again, IronOS has existed for a little bit now. But now you can go in and say, hey, you know what? If my state is away and like if Rohan is not home and the iron is on, turn it off kind of thing, right? So which is pretty cool.
I have been talking on this podcast for I don't know how many years we've been doing this now. I don't want to know. But I've always said I would never touch an iron, right? Like, I'm not going to get a soldering iron. This might change my opinion. Oh, like, if I can integrate into Home Assistant, like, okay, all right. Maybe now I have a reason to buy an iron, like a soldering iron, because I can integrate it into Home Assistant.
It's not going to stop you from burning yourself. If you touch the iron part, like you keep saying you're going to, you will hurt yourself.
I understand. I mean, I will learn that mistake, surely, at least once, all right? But, you know, like, I do like the... Similar to, you know, like leaving the stove on, right? Like this is another way to say, hey, I know the soldering iron hasn't been left on. So, And it's a cool gadget, right? Then I have an excuse to...
Yeah.
Although, what am I going to realistically solder? Probably nothing. I don't know. Let's just save the money for now. You've convinced me. You convinced me, Rohan. I won't buy it for now.
All right. Perfect.
All right. Israel Rail, you can now get real-time departure information from the railways into Home Assistant.
Link Play, control various media players based on Link Play protocol. So this is actually pretty cool because now, again, the Link Play, if you're not familiar with it, is another type of kind of over-the-air streaming kind of protocol. So speakers like WIM, Belkin, Edifer, Harman Kardon, JBL, Yamaha, a lot of them actually use this protocol to communicate. So that's actually pretty neat. So now you can control them, control those kind of devices that you might not have been able to in the past. Usually they'll give you a couple of different options of how you can connect to that device. But if some of them had only Link Play on it, you can now bring those in to Home Assistant, which is really nice.
Some big brands there. I don't think it supports all of the models from those brands. So, you know, if you might have a JBL speaker, it might be supported, might not be. So, yeah, definitely check if your device is supported.
If they talk.
Mad VR Envy, who have video home theater projectors, processors, you can now get them controlled through Home Assistant. I do love the name. I looked at their website. I was like, oh, this looks interesting. If I had enough room for home cinema, maybe. Do they sell it in Australia? No idea. They asked for my email address before they'd give me a location of where they sell them. So I know they're in the US, but yeah.
That already means you can't afford
exactly.
it.
Though. Exactly.
If they're not telling you the price and they're telling you
exactly.
to email
exactly.
Yeah.
You have to ask. You can't afford it.
SimpleFin. So SimpleFin is a financial data provider that offers kind of an easy-to-use API for retrieving financial data. So they now go in and bring those U.S. dollar conversions or Canadian dollar conversions,
whatever.
No,
I could actually
into...
hook up...
Oh, stock tickers,
no,
probably.
You can hook up bank accounts and things like that.
Whoa.
But I... So it does say, you know, an easy-to-use API. I looked at it. I was like, oh, yes, I can finally get some, like, an API to, you know, find out, like, you know, where I'm spending my money and, you know, put that into some data and all that. But one, it doesn't support Australian financial institutions. So, sorry, too bad, too sad, Phil. And, yeah, just finding the list of, you know, what, you know, things are supported wasn't as intuitive as I thought. It. Yeah, I think the last blog post was, like, back in 2018. You know, it was, like, three blog posts up on the site. I was excited. Someone's clearly got a use case for it. I think, you know, wherever the countries that you know, have it supported and they've integrated it, good. We have open banking here in Australia and very high regulations, so I doubt something like SimpleFin is going to ever be supported. But, yeah, good to see that. You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's a lot of stuff that will synchronize with banks and stuff like that. It's cool that they have that API, so if you ever want to build something in that sense by yourself. There's a lot of cool tools. I know Mint, I used to use Mint. They shut down.
Gone.
There's a few other ones. I use one called Lunch Money now. That kind of does like a budgeting tool and kind of imports all your transactions and categorizes them and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff out there. Yeah, that's SimpleFin.
Tesla Fleet. You can now connect and monitor various sensors from your Tesla vehicles, Powerwall, solar, and wall connectors through the Tesla Fleet API. I think the Tezi integration as well, got a whole bunch of new sensors as well, in this release as well. I think there was, just a whole bunch of new diagnostic sensors as well. So yeah, Tesla's been given a lot of love, this release.
Yeah. And then this Tesla Fleet API is their actual official Fleet API, right? So that's what Tezi used behind the scenes. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought that's what they, cause I know they do use an actual Tesla APIs from what I read. Where they have permission to use them. All right. Let's talk some breaking changes. The recorder database. So this release includes a bit of an upgrade that increases the size of the number you can store for identifier fields. So basically what's happening is under the covers, they're moving from a 32-bit integer to BigInt, which is a 64-bit integer. That means that the database upgrade can take a little bit longer than usual. Depending on the size of your database. This should be pretty much a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. You shouldn't have to do anything to integrate, but just as a little bit of a heads up that that's going to change.
If you're using the default, you know, SQLite database, this doesn't affect you. It's really if you're using like a MySQL, PostgreSQL, SQL, something like that. All right, Lights, similar breaking change here. There's going to be a whole bunch of attributes against lights, you know, things like brightness, color, effect, all the, you know, anything that you see in the state attributes, essentially, they're no longer going to be recorded in the database. So it's not going to have any impact on the operation of your lights or anything like that. That all remains the same. What it does mean though, is that, from history perspective, you know, when you change the color from green to red, that's not going to be recorded, in the database. The idea being it's going to save a lot of space in your database and make everything more snappy. So there's some trade-offs.
WLED, you now need to be running at least WLED 0.14.0. if you're running any WLED device, which a lot of people are.
Yeah, I'm interested. Like, I wonder, like, I don't know what the upgrade path for WLED is. And, you know, does that mean that if someone's got a random light that is on, you know, 0.13, that now they have to go and upgrade it? What if they can't upgrade that light? Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's why it's a break and change. So, you know.
Thanks. Is that what a break?
I guess it's not called breaking changes anymore, but where's that called?
Backward changes. Incompatible changes.
Yes. All right. So that's it for that. Just another little announcement as well. There is something called the Wake Word Collective, and we'll leave the link to this in the show notes. Home Assistant is basically trying to collect wake words in as many different accents and stuff as they can. So the idea is when you start saying something like, and I will say this, so if you have Home Assistant voice running, heads up. If you say, okay, Nabu, the way I say it might sound different than how Phil says it, different than, you know, whatever, whoever else, right? So they're trying to just get a little bit of diversity. And the problem with this, a lot of data sets that you have that's available right now assumes a very specific way, which is typically like American English or British English. And that's it. So if you're German or Indian or Chinese or something like that, where your English has somewhat of a different accent, you might not be picked up because those data sets that they use to train the data isn't actually diverse. So the reason, and so that's kind of the reason why they want to do this, is that they want to get a diverse set of data. They want to make sure, you know, accents like yours are captured, right? And again, not everybody that uses Home Assistant is native English speaking. So again, the word okay Nabu comes out as different things sometimes, right? So it comes out differently as depending on who you are and how you speak. So based on that, there's a link for it. Basically, you'll click the link and you'll say, hey, I'm ready to start recording. And you'll just say, okay, Nabu, like 10 times or whatever. It'll take some time in between while it processes. So you click it and you say, okay, Nabu, wait. And then once it gives you the green light again, you click it again, say, okay, Nabu, and just do that a few times. That's actually going to help the voice project quite a bit. So I haven't done it yet, but I do plan to do that. And you should too, if you can. Hopefully it'll help out the Home Assistant project quite a bit.
Do you know what wake words they are training against? Is it only like OK Nabu, or are they going for, you know, what I'm just trying to work out, like, what if I don't want OK Nabu to be my wake word? Is this going to benefit me?
Yeah, so yes and no. And so this is actually the micro wake word project, right? So I kept saying Home Assistant voice, but really it is that. So they are only recording OK Nabu, but that is pretty much going to be the default voice, right? And then behind there, you can actually go in and just develop your own. But I think this will also kind of give it a slight understanding of how different accents work and stuff. So I don't know enough about machine learning or how they train some of this data, but at some point they might be able to extrapolate certain things to say, hey, you know, this is how certain accents might peak or trough or some of that. Again, that's my guess. I am not smart enough to know anything about this, but you can actually change the wake word, but right now the only option is okay Nabu. So they might add other ones down the road. I think they will do that too. So there, it actually says on the website, we're starting with one wake word and working with the community on which to decide next.
Nice. Okay.
So they will be starting that, and this will be kind of an ongoing thing. And I think, again, this has kind of always been there's always been like Jarvis and okay Nabu and like all of those kind of wake words. I think they're kind of going to pick a couple, which the community uses the most, record those, and then they go from there.
Nice. Well, I'll get on there and add my voice.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. 2024 to date. I think that's it, Rohan, with a few extras. Thank you very much for listening. See you in the next one.
Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.
Percent of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.